The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
The International Air Transport Association, IATA, announced that it's developing a new digital travel pass that could reopen international travel and replace compulsory quarantine measures. The use of blockchain technology would allow passengers to keep control of their own data as well. In other aviation news, could a pilotless plane be flying across the UK sometime soon? Well, to talk about this and much more, retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Safety and Security Auditor Kevin Byrne is on the line. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, this IATA travel pass, it's a complicated piece of technology because it's got to, you know, give your status vis-a-vis testing and vaccines, and everyone's got to be able to read it, and yet it's got to remain private. Explain.
Well, it's sort of a modification of IATA's Timatic offering, which has been around for 60 years now, which put together much of the information people required to go to and from the airport. IATA is the International Air Transport Association. 83% of the world's airlines are members of it. Some of the low-cost carriers are not, but it's quite a good and progressive organization which has moved forward very quickly, I think, in this regard, because they want to get this travel pass out in the first quarter of this year. And they've done it in conjunction initially with the International Airlines Group, which is, of course, a big group of airlines, and others, including Singapore, Etihad and Emirates. And they really want to get aircraft and in the sky again with people on board. What you would do is upload their mobile application and you put in information such as your usual airline information. You would then bring it to a lab, get your test done, and the lab test would be fired back to you, and the information would be shared with the airline and with the airports and with security and other organizations. So when you came to the airport, you literally hold up this barcode, and I think it would be an authorization to go flying in every sense of the word. And it would also be acceptable in the various destinations to which you're going, so it's not just for internal use. It is very progressive, though, and I have a great concern. I've always had a concern about digital passports and digital boarding passes, because I was behind a gentleman in Stansted Airport about a year and a half ago, and his phone went blank just as he was trying to board the aircraft, and he was in a flurry to try and get it reconnected and recharged. You have to have a fully charged laptop, or your phone has to be fully charged.
Because people use boarding passes on their phones all the time these days. But the big thing is, how can you be sure that, for example, your vaccination is going to be acceptable? How can you be sure that your recent test is going to be acceptable? And would the test, after 2 or 3 days lapse? So that, you've got a test 5 days ago. That doesn't mean you're okay now.
No, it has to be done at a certain time. It has to be put in straight away, and you must not be able to interfere with it. In other words, it comes from the laboratory, which will be approved. The test must be approved by the World Health Organization in conjunction with IATA. So we have to have buy-in from different parts of the world, and I think they will get it. As I say, my only concern is that it might not be suitable for certain parts of the world where they mightn't have the technology. I've been to places where they really want paper, but more and more people want to go flying, and therefore they will invest in the systems required to run this organ, this system for the future.
When are they going to trial it?
It's trialing now in February, so in a couple of weeks' time, like that. And the more expensive or extensive, I should say, PCR testing to prove that this works will take place in April 21. So Emirates customers travelling to Dubai will be able to share that. Dubai is a place I quite like. I went through it about 25, 30 times in 2019, although I'd love to see it again sometime soon. But you'll probably need to be in this system to get through Dubai if they let you fly on to the next destination.
Okay, and it uses what's called blockchain technology.
Yes.
Now, I don't really understand that, but...
No, I know from my logistics background, I've been to 2 or 3 lectures on blockchain by experts to explain how it works, and I was no wiser at the end of the lectures than I was at the front. It's quite a complex thing, but they do claim that it cannot be interfered with in any really way. It cannot be, changed or altered. So it is quite secure, unlike systems that are on the computer now, which of course can be hacked in very short term.
Now, let's move on to the notion of aircraft development. We talk about sustainability all the time, and one of the options is to fly using hydrogen.
Yeah.
You've got to create the hydrogen using some alternative energy like solar energy. That's the first challenge, because if you're using energy to create energy, it's not sustainable. But flying with hydrogen on board, how do you feel?
I don't know. When I read about this, I was a bit surprised because it hasn't moved forward. They did fly hydrogen aeroplanes more than 30 years ago, jet aircraft flying on hydrogen, and it worked quite well. But what you lose out is on space because hydrogen has to be compressed. It's quite a large fuel compared to the calorific value of our aviation turbine fuel, which is basically kerosene. I also went to the Zeppelin Museum down in Friedrichshafen in Germany, and I saw the video they show of the demise of the Hindenburg, which was a magnificent Zeppelin
airship,
crossing
the
Atlantic many times. The airship, it caught fire and it burnt out in less than 3 or 4 minutes. So, I mean, hydrogen has to be handled in a certain way. We've been handling aviation turbine fuel in a very safe way for years and years now. I'm not sure how you'd store it. Does it have to be compressed in a, you know, compression device? Is it safe to handle? And you have to then re-alter people training and also the fire safety concerns that you have at airports because their aircraft carry large volumes of fuel on takeoff and landing indeed.
Okay, so that's one thing that you think about before you got on board. What about getting on board a plane that has one pilot up front and a robotic co-pilot or else two robots up front?
Yeah, let's go for the single pilot. Single pilot operations are the norm in certain parts. If you went, for example, to the Aran Islands, which I do from time to time, it's a fabulous place to go, and they fly twin-engined Britain Norman Islander aircraft, have done so for years and years in great safety. You get a single pilot, but it's a visual flight. If you go around Sydney Harbour on a float plane, you get a single pilot. So if you went to the Grand Canyon, you get a single pilot. You know, it's not unusual in that regard. Over longer distances, really, they put two pilots in for safety. One who is an assistant flying as an autopilot wouldn't be a problem, I don't think, provided, of course, the medical and the other checks have been done in that regard. So that'll have to be proven. As to getting onto an aircraft with no pilot at all, I have grave reservations about that. We've all seen the videos where pilots are in flying suits in Nevada and they're flying military drones over what they call enemy territory in different parts of the world and dropping missiles. That's a different thing. You've got a connection. I don't think there's any suggestion that we'll have pilots on the ground who will be controlling these aircraft from the ground using autonomous systems. If it's a fully autonomous aircraft, Pat, I have grave concerns about it. It'll have to be proven. I'm not saying it wouldn't work. We have got trains in London that have no people on board. Trains in airports have no people on board. Aircraft are three-dimensional things, and they fly through the air, and they take off and land with great energy. So I have a little bit of concern about that at the moment.
Now, the 737 MAX, a former senior manager at the Boeing plant in Seattle, has raised some concerns. What do you make of them?
Well, Mr. Ed Pearson was making statements saying it shouldn't be certified yet. As you know, we discussed this before. It's now flying in Brazil and in Canada and in the United States itself. Mr. Ed Pearson was complaining that it shouldn't happen yet. It wasn't safe in the first place. But he was disregarded in some ways because the director of the Federal Aviation Authority said not only had he flown the aircraft, which he did in Canada, but he'd be very happy to put his family on board on any commercial flight, provided the conditions of training and the conditions of upgrades and all of that were done before it happened. And we've had something similar here in Europe because this week the European Aviation Safety Agency, the Director General of that, and that was Mr. Patrick Key, he gave evidence to the European Parliament's Transport and Tourism Committee, and he said something similar. He said, we performed a certain number of audits on site, we've addressed all of the requirements for it, and we did simulator sessions and flew the aircraft. And he said, no aircraft has had as much inspection and investigation, and he'd be very happy to fly in it. And indeed, he said, I think the MAX is one of the most documented topics or aircraft in the history of aviation, and having seen it done in certification in the US, Brazil and Canada, we're going to do the same thing. So I think that's expected in the next couple of days, possibly by Friday. They haven't confirmed the date of that yet, but you'll see the MAX probably flying around Europe fairly soon now, and I think it will be a safe aircraft. They'll be very careful to look at it. As I said, in America you can opt out. If there's a MAX listed for your flight, you can ask for a change of flight or your money back in certain airlines. I'm not sure that'll happen here. Most people don't know what they're getting onto, to be honest, when they get onto an aircraft at an airport. But look, there's no great rush on this, Pat, because every day I think aviation is going backwards, not forwards, in terms of our numbers yet, because the borders are closing down, not opening up.
Now, one of the listeners, they always anticipate problems with this digital travel pass from IATA. What happens if your flight is delayed and your test lapses? Who will cover the costs?
It's a very good question, isn't it? I don't know. I think that's why they give you 72 hours. Is that the effectiveness of a COVID test? I've had three of them, as you know, the PCR test before going to hospital, and it lasted 72 hours. They said, you're okay for that. After that, I don't know. It's an interesting one. Also, the cost of it, if you've got to pay for it yourself, if it's a travel. I mentioned this before. If it's 100 euros and you've got five people, that's 500 on top of the flights to wherever you're going. So, and then you may have to do the same thing coming back, in which case the documents digitally are fine, but it's going to cost you in the pocket. And that will decrease the propensity for people to travel for tourist purposes, and it's a zero-sum game, you know.
We have, of course, the possibility of using antigen testing, because the latest science and all of that suggests that an antigen test, which shows the presence of the virus at an infectious level, in other words, if you show positive, you're infectious, so you don't travel, you go home and you isolate or whatever. Here's one. Rehydrogen as an alternative fuel. I can't see hydrogen replacing fuel en masse. The biggest single contributor to global warming is not toxic emissions, but water vapor. Is that true? And the byproduct of hydrogen cell technology is water vapor. This will speed up global warming. That's according to Ed in Cork. There's loads of water.
Not sure
vapor
that's true. It's beyond my skill, but I mean, water vapors in the clouds. We live in the second wettest country in Europe. Norway, I think, is the wettest, but we've got a lot of cloud and water vapor. But we still can grow plenty of vegetables and fruit and all that kind of thing. And I don't know if the excess water vapor in the air is going to make much difference from aviation. Probably
and
not.
Kevin. A question for you from left field. This is from Dermot. Why does Pat continually use the British pronunciation of lieutenant as lieutenant? The falling use of this term galls me, says Dermot. I've always called people in the Irish Army lieutenant.
I think it comes
lieutenant, I see, as an Americanism. I don't know where the name derives from. But in the Irish Army, it is lieutenant, isn't it?
Yeah, we kept the ranks. The Americans call it lieutenant, as do the Canadians, funnily enough, North Americans. But that's just the pronunciation of it. It's like drive-through, T-H-R-U. We spell T-H-R-O-U-G-H. It's a quirkism, I would call it like that. It has to do with, I think, is it etymology, the derivations of words? I've forgotten the expression there. But it is. It's been called lieutenant colonel and lieutenant general and so forth. In Germany, it's Oberstleutnant, you know, so it comes from some stem in the Latin countries, maybe, or somewhere like that.
Yeah, just how L-I-E-U became left is a mystery to me. I shall try and find out overnight and bring it to Dermot, our listener, and explain perhaps on tomorrow's programme. But, you know, some say tomato, some say tomato. That's the way it goes. Kevin, thank you very much for joining us. Retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Safety and Security Auditor Kevin Byrne, thank you very much.